The morning light surrounds Ruth in a halo.
I wish I could have met him, she says.
You would have liked him. Ruth clears her throat, considering this before turning away. She faces the snow-caked window. Her thoughts her own. This car, I think, has become my tomb.
You were also thinking about the hospital, she murmurs.
When I nod, she emits a weary sigh.
Did you not hear what I told you? She says, turning to me again. That it did not matter to me. I would not lie to you about this.
Not on purpose, I answer. But I think that maybe you sometimes lied to yourself. She is surprised by my words. If only because I have never spoken so directly on this matter. But I know I am right.
This is why you stopped writing me, she observes.
After you had been sent back to California, your letters became less frequent, until they finally stopped coming at all. I did not hear from you for 6 months. I stopped writing because I remembered what you'd told me.
Because you wanted to end it between us.
There is an undercurrent of anger in her voice, and I can't meet her eyes. I wanted you to be happy.
I was not happy, she snaps. I was confused and heartbroken, and I did not understand what had happened. And I prayed for you every day, hoping you would let me help you. But instead I would go to the mailbox and find it empty, no matter how many letters I sent.
I'm sorry. It was wrong of me to do that.
Did you even read my letters?
Everyone. I read them over and over, and more than once I tried to write so you could know what happened. But I could never find the right words.
She shakes her head. You did not even tell me when you were to arrive home. It was your mother who told me. And I thought about meeting you at the station, like you used to do when I came home.
But you didn't.
I wanted to see if you would come to me. But days passed, and then a week. And when I did not see you at the synagogue, I understood that you were trying to avoid me. So I finally marched over to your shop and told you that I needed to speak to you. And do you remember what you said to me?
Of all the things I've said in my life, these are the words I regret the most. But Ruth is waiting, her tense expression fixed on my face. There is a fierce challenge in the way she waits. I told you that the engagement was off, and that it was over between us.
She arches an eyebrow. Yes, she says. That is what you told me.
I couldn't talk to you then. I was...
When I trail off, she finishes for me. Angry, she nods. I could see it in your eyes. But even then, I knew you were still in love with me.
Yes, I admit.
I was.
But your words were still hurtful, she says. I went home and cried like I had not since I was a child. And my mother finally came in and held me, and neither of us knew what to do. I had lost so much already, I could not bear to lose you, too. By this she means her family, the family that had stayed behind in Vienna. At the time, I didn't realize how selfish my actions were or how Ruth might have perceived them. This memory, too, has stayed with me. And in the car, I feel an age-old shame. Ruth, my dream, knows what I'm feeling. When she speaks, it is with a new tenderness.
But if it was really over, I wanted to understand the reason. So the next day I went to the drugstore across from your shop and ordered a chocolate soda. I sat next to the window and watched you as you worked. I know you saw me, but you did not come over. So I went back the next day, and the day after that, and only then did you finally cross the street to see me.
My mother made me go, I admit. She told me that you deserved an explanation.
That is what you have always said. But I think you also wanted to come because you missed me, and because you knew that only I could help you heal. I close my eyes at her words. She is right, of course, right about all of it. Ruth always did know me better than I knew myself. I took a seat across from you, I say, and then a moment later a chocolate soda arrived for me. You were so skinny. I thought you needed my help to get fat again, like you were when we met.
I was never fat, I protest.
I barely made weight when I joined the army. Yes, but when you got back, you were all bones. Your suit hung from your frame like it was two sizes too big. I thought you would blow away as you crossed the street, and it made me wonder whether you would ever be yourself again. I was not sure you would ever again be the man I once loved.
And yet you still gave me a chance.
She shrugs. I had no choice, she says, her eyes glittering. By then, David Epstein was married. I laugh despite myself, and my body spasms, neurons blazing, nausea coming at me. I breathe through gritted teeth and gradually feel the wave begin to recede. Ruth waits for my breathing to steady before going on. I admit that I was frightened about this. I wanted things between us to be the way they had been before, so I simply pretended that nothing had changed. I chattered about college and my friends and how much I had studied and that my parents had surprised me by showing up at my graduation. I talked about my work as a substitute teacher at a school around the corner from the synagogue, but also mentioned that I was interviewing for a full-time position that fall at a rural elementary school on the outskirts of town. I told you also that my father was meeting with the dean of the art history department at Duke for the third time, and that my parents might have to move to Durham. And then I wondered aloud whether I would have to give up my new job and move to Durham too.
And I suddenly knew I didn't want you to go.
That is why I said it, she smiles. I wanted to see your expression, and for just an instant the old Ira was back, and then I was no longer frightened that you were gone forever.
But you didn't ask me to walk you home.
You were not ready. There was still too much anger inside you. That is why I suggested that we meet once a week for chocolate sodas, just like we used to. You needed time, and I was willing to wait.
For a while, not forever.
No, not forever. By the end of February, I had begun to wonder whether you would ever kiss me again.
I wanted to, I say. Every time I was with you, I wanted to kiss you.
I knew that, too. And that was why it was so confusing to me. I could not understand what was wrong. I could not understand what was holding you back, why you did not trust me. You should have known that I would love you no matter what.
I did know, I say. And that was why I couldn't tell you.
I did eventually tell her, of course, on a cold evening in early March. I had called her at home asking her to meet me in the park where we had strolled together 100 times. At the time, I wasn't planning to tell her. Instead, I convinced myself that I simply needed a friend to talk to, as the atmosphere at home had become oppressive. My father had done well financially during the war, and as soon as it was over, he went back into business as a haberdasher. Gone were the sewing machines. In their place were racks of suits, and to someone walking past the shop, it probably looked the same as it did before the war. But inside, it was different. My father was different. Instead of greeting customers at the door as he used to, he would spend his afternoons in the back room, listening to the news on the radio. trying to understand the madness that had caused the deaths of so many innocent people. It was all he wanted to talk about. The Holocaust became the subject of every mealtime conversation and every spare moment. By contrast, the more he talked, the more my mother concentrated on her sewing, because she couldn't bear to think about it. For my father, after all, it was an abstract horror. For my mother, who, like Ruth, had lost friends and family, it was deeply personal. And in their divergent reactions to these shattering events, my parents gradually set in motion the largely separate lives they would lead from that point on. As their son, I tried not to take sides. With my father, I would listen, and with my mother, I would say nothing. But when the three of us were together, it sometimes struck me that we'd forgotten what it meant to be a family. Nor did it help that my father now accompanied my mother and me to synagogue. My intimate talks with my mother became a thing of the past. When my father informed me that he was bringing me in as a partner in the business, meaning the three of us would be together all the time, I despaired, sure that there would be no escaping the gloom that had infiltrated our lives.
"You are thinking about your parents,"
Ruth says to me. "You were always kind to them," I say.
"I loved your mother very much,"
Ruth says.
"Despite the difference in our ages, she was the first real friend I made in this country."
"And my father?" "I loved him too. How could I not? He was family." I smile, recalling that in later years she was always more patient with him than I was. "Can I ask you a question?"
"You can ask me anything."
"Why did you wait for me? Even after I stopped writing? I know you say that you loved me, but..."
"We are back to this? You wonder why I loved you?
You could have had anyone." She leans closer to me, her voice soft.
"This has always been your problem, Ira," she says. "You do not see in yourself what others see in you. You think you are not handsome enough, but you were very handsome when you were young. You think you are not interesting or smart enough, but you are these things too. And that you are not aware of your best qualities is part of your charm. You always see so much in others, as you did in me. You made me feel special."
"But you are special," I insist.
She raises her hands in delight. "This is what I am talking about," she says, laughing. "You are a man of deep feelings who has always cared about others, and I am not alone in recognizing that. Your friend, Joe Torre, sensed it. I am sure that is why he spent his free time with you. And my mother sensed it as well, which was why she held me when I thought I had lost you. Because we both knew that men like you are rare."
"I'm glad you came that night," I say. "I needed you."
"And you also knew, as soon as we fell into step at the park, that you were finally ready to tell me the truth. All of it." I nod. In one of my final letters, I'd briefly told her about the bombing run over Schweinfurt and Joe Torre. I mentioned the wounds I'd received and the infection that had followed. But I hadn't told her everything. On that night, however, I started at the beginning. I related every detail, and I held nothing back. On the bench, she listened to my outpouring of words without speaking. Afterward, she slipped her arms around me, and I leaned into her. The emotions washed over me in waves, her whispered words of comfort unleashing memories I had tried too long to bury. I don't know how long it took for the storm inside me to subside, but by that point I was exhausted. Yet there was one thing remaining that I had not revealed, something that not even my parents knew. In the car, Ruth is silent,
I know she is replaying what I said to her that night. I told you that I got the mumps while I was in the hospital. The worst case the doctor had ever seen. And I told you what the doctor said to me. Ruth remains quiet, but her eyes start to glisten. He said that mumps can cause sterility, I say. That's why I tried to end it between us. Because I knew that if you ever married me, there was a good chance that we would never have children.
Nine. Sophia. And then what? Marcia asked. She was standing in front of the mirror and applying a second coat of mascara while Sophia recounted her day at the ranch. Don't tell me you slept with him. As she said it, she examined Sophia's reflection in the mirror. Of course not, Sophia said. She crossed one leg beneath the other on the bed. It wasn't like that. We just kissed and then we talked some more and... Then when I left, he kissed me again at the car. It was sweet. Oh, Marcia said, stopping in her attempt to dab on some mascara. Don't hide your disappointment, really. What? She announced. The way you looked just now makes me think you wanted to. I barely know him. That's not true. You were with him, what, more than an hour last night and 6 or 7 hours today? That's a lot of time together. That's a lot of talking. Horseback riding, a couple of beers. If it was me, I might have grabbed his hand and just dragged him inside. Marcia, I'm just saying. He was seriously hot. You noticed that, right? Sophia really, truly didn't want the whole hot thing to start up again. He's a nice guy, she said, trying to head it off. Even better, Marcia said, giving her a wink. She applied a glossy coat of lipstick before reaching for a hair clip. But okay, I get it. You're different than me. And I respect that. I really do. I'm just glad you're done with Brian. I've been done with him since I broke up with him. I could tell, she said, gathering her rich brown hair into a sleek ponytail and securing it with a glittery hair clip. You know I talked to him, right? When? At the rodeo when you were off with Mr. Hottie. Sophia frowned. Why didn't you tell me? What was there to tell? I was just trying to distract him. The Duke guys hated him, by the way. She adjusted a few strands that she had artfully loosened from the ponytail, then met Sophia's gaze in the mirror. You have to admit, I'm the best roommate ever, right? Convincing you to go out with us? If it wasn't for me, you'd still be moping around our room all day. All of which makes me wonder when I'm going to get the chance to meet your new stud. We didn't talk about getting together again. Marcia's face was incredulous. How could you not talk about it? Because we're different, Sophia thought. And because she didn't really know why, other than that the dizzy way the kiss made her feel obliterated all practical thought. All I know is that he's going to be out of town next weekend. He's going to be riding in Knoxville. So call him. Invite him over to the house before he leaves. Sophia shook her head. I'm not going to call him. And if he doesn't call you? He said he would. A lot of times, guys just say that and you never hear from them again. He's not like that, she said. And as if proving her point, her cell phone began to ring. Recognizing Luke's phone number, she grabbed it and jumped up from the bed. Don't tell me that's him already. He said he would call to make sure I got home safely. Sophia was already bounding to the door, barely noticing her roommate's surprise or the words she muttered to herself as Sophia slipped into the hallway. I've really, really got to meet this guy. On Thursday evening, an hour after the sun had gone down, Sophia was finishing up her hair when Marcia turned toward her. She'd been standing at the window and watching for Luke's truck, making Sophia feel even more nervous than she already was. She'd vetoed three of Sophia's outfits, had lent her a pair of gold, dangly earrings and a necklace that matched, and as she skipped toward Sophia, she didn't bother to hide her excitement. He's here, I'm going downstairs to meet him at the door. Sophia let out a long breath. Okay, I'm ready. Let's go. No, you stay in the room for a few minutes. You don't want him to think you were watching for him. I wasn't watching for him, Sophia said. You were. You know what I mean. You need to make an entrance. He needs to see you coming down the stairs. The last thing you want is for him to think you're desperate. Why are you making this so complicated? Sophia protested. Trust me, Marcia said. I know what I'm doing. Come down in 3 minutes. Count to 100 or something. I've got to go. She fled, leaving Sophia alone with her nerves, her stomach feeling topsy-turvy. Which was strange since they'd talked on the phone for an hour or more the last 3 nights, picking up each conversation exactly where they had left off. He would usually call around dusk, and she'd talk to him from the porch, trying to imagine how he looked at that moment and replaying their day together endlessly. Spending time with him at the ranch was one thing. That was easy. But seeing Luke here, at the sorority house, he might as well be visiting Mars. In the 3 years she'd lived here, the only guys who'd ever come to the house, aside from brothers or fathers or boyfriends from back home, were either frat boys or recently graduated frat boys or frat boys from other colleges. She'd gently tried to warn him, but wasn't sure quite how to tell him that the girls in the house would probably regard him as an exotic specimen, a subject of endless chatter as soon as he left. She'd suggested meeting him off campus, but he'd said he'd never been to Wake and wanted to walk around. She fought the urge to race downstairs and hurry him out the door as quickly as possible. Remembering Marcia's insistent advice, Sophia took a deep breath and gave herself the once-over in the mirror. Jeans, blouse, pumps. Pretty much what she'd worn the last time they'd been together, but upgraded. She turned first one way and then the other, thinking, that's all I can do. Then she gave a coy smile and admitted, but not bad at all. She checked her watch and let another minute pass before exiting the room. During the week, men were allowed entrance only to the foyer and the parlor. The parlor, which boasted couches and a gigantic flat-screen TV, was where a lot of her sisters liked to hang out. As she approached the steps at the end of the hall, she could hear Marcia laughing in an otherwise silent room. She walked a bit faster, praying that she and Luke could escape without being noticed. She spotted him right away, standing in the center of the room next to Marcia, hat in hand. As always, he was wearing boots and jeans, his outfit completed by a belt with a shiny, oversized silver buckle. Sophia's heart sank as she realized that he and Marcia weren't alone in the parlor. In fact, it was more crowded than usual, but eerily silent. Three frat boys dressed in cargo shorts, polos, and topsiders gaped at Luke in the same way Mary Kate did from the opposite couch. Likewise, Jenny, Drew, and Brittany. Four or five more girls huddled silently in the far corner, all of them trying their best to figure out the unexpected stranger in their presence. But as far as she could tell, their scrutiny had no effect on him. He seemed at ease, listening as Marcia chattered on, her hands gesturing flamboyantly. As she reached the entrance to the parlor, he glanced up and saw her. Breaking into a grin, his dimples flashing, he conveyed the impression that Marcia had vanished and that he and Sophia were the only two people in the room. Sophia took a deep breath and stepped into the parlor, feeling everyone's attention swing to her. On cue, Jenny leaned toward Drew and Brittany and whispered something. Though they'd naturally heard about her breakup with Brian, it was clear that none of them had heard about Luke, and she wondered how quickly Brian would find out that a cowboy had come to pick her up. On Greek Row, word would get around fast. She could already imagine any number of them dialing their cell phones, even before she and Luke reached the truck. Which meant that Brian would find out. It wouldn't take much for him to guess that it was the same cowboy who'd humiliated him the weekend before. He wasn't going to be happy about it, nor would his frat brothers. And depending on how much they'd been drinking, on Thursdays everyone started early, they just might get it into their heads to exact revenge. Suddenly queasy, she wondered why she hadn't thought of it before. Hey there, she said, doing her best to disguise her anxiety. Luke's smile deepened.
You look fantastic.
Thank you, Sophia murmured.
I like him, Marcia chimed in.
Luke glanced at her, startled, before turning back to Sophia.
Obviously, I had a chance to meet your roommate.
I was trying to find out if he had any single friends, Marcia admitted.
And?
He said he'd see what he could do. Sophia motioned with her head. You ready to go? She asked. Marcia was already shaking her head. No, not yet. He just got here. Sophia glared at Marcia, hoping she'd pick up on her cues. We really can't stay. Come on, Marcia cajoled. Let's get a drink first. Thursday night, remember? I want to hear about riding bulls. Off to the side, Mary Kate's expression was pinched as she put the pieces together. No doubt Brian had returned to the table last Saturday, regaling everyone with stories about how he'd been jumped by a gang of cowboys. Brian and Mary Kate had always been friends, and when Mary Kate grabbed her phone and rose from the couch and left the parlor, Sophia assumed the worst and didn't hesitate. We can't stay. We have reservations, she said firmly. What? Marcia blinked. You didn't tell me that. Where? Sophia blanked, unable to think of anything. She could feel Luke watching her before he cleared his throat.
Fabian's, he suddenly announced.
Marcia swiveled her attention from one to the other. I'm sure they won't mind if you're a few minutes late.
Unfortunately, we're already running late, Luke said.
Then to Sophia,
do you have everything?
Sophia felt a surge of relief and adjusted the purse strap on her shoulder. I'm ready, she agreed. Luke took her elbow gently as he led her toward the door.
Nice meeting you, Marcia.
You too, she said, bewildered. Opening the door, he stopped to put his hat back on. He wore an amused expression as he adjusted it, as if to acknowledge their confusion about the whole thing. With a grin, he stepped out with Sophia on his arm. As the door swung shut behind them, Sophia heard the burst of excited chatter. If Luke heard it, he appeared to pay it no attention. Instead, he led her to the truck and opened the door, then walked around the front to his side. As he did, she noticed a row of eager faces, including Marcia's, at the parlor windows. She was debating whether to acknowledge them with a wave or simply ignore them, when Luke crawled in, closing the door with a thud.
I'm guessing you've made them curious, he said.
She shook her head. It's not me they're wondering about.
Oh, I get it, he said. It's because I'm skinny, right?
She laughed, and with that, she realized that she no longer cared about what the others were thinking or doing or saying about them. Thanks for covering for me in there.
What's going on?
She told him about her concerns about Brian and her suspicions about Mary Kate.
I wondered about that, he said. You mentioned that he'd been watching you. Part of me was expecting him to burst through the door any minute.
And yet you came anyway?
I had to,
he shrugged.
You invited me.
She leaned her head back against the headrest, liking the way he sounded. I'm sorry that I'm not going to be able to show you the campus tonight.
No big deal.
We can do it another time, she promised. When he doesn't know you're here, I mean. I'll show you all the cool places.
It's a date, he said.
Up close, his eyes were a clear, unalloyed blue, striking in their purity. She plucked at an imaginary piece of lint on her jeans. What would you like to do? He thought about it.
Are you hungry?
A little, she admitted.
Do you want to go to Fabian's? I'm not sure we can get in since we don't really have a reservation, but we could try.
She thought about it, then shook her head. No, not tonight. I want to go someplace a little off the beaten track. How about sushi? He didn't respond right away.
Okay,
he offered. She regarded him. Have you ever had sushi before?
I might live on a ranch, but I've left it every now and then.
And? She thought. You didn't answer my question. He fiddled with the keys before slipping the right one in the ignition.
No,
he admitted.
I've never had sushi.
All she could do was laugh. Following Sophia's directions, they drove to Sakura Japanese Restaurant. Inside, most of the tables were occupied, as was the sushi bar. While they waited for the hostess, Sophia looked around, praying she wouldn't bump into anyone she knew. It wasn't the kind of place regularly frequented by students. Burgers and pizza were the favorite foods of college students everywhere. But Sakura wasn't totally unknown, either. She'd come here occasionally with Marcia, and even though she didn't recognize anyone, she nonetheless requested a seat on the outdoor patio. Heat lamps glowed in the corners of the patio, casting a blanket of warmth that took the edge off the evening chill. Only one other table was occupied by a couple finishing their meal, and it was blissfully quiet. The view wasn't much, but the soft yellow glow from the Japanese lantern overhead gave the place a romantic feel. After they took their seats, Sophia leaned toward Luke. What did you think of Marcia?
Your roommate? She seemed nice enough. Kinda touchy, though.
She tilted her head. You mean, like, irritable?
No, I mean she kept touching my arm when she talked.
Sophia waved it off. That's just the way she is. She's like that with every guy. The world's biggest flirt. Do you know what the first thing she said to me was? Even before I entered the house?
I'm afraid to ask.
She said, I hear you kissed my best friend.
No surprise there, Sophia thought.
That's Marcia, all right. She pretty much says whatever she's thinking.
No filter. But you like her.
Yeah, Sophia conceded. I do. She's kind of taken me under her wing when I've needed it. She thinks I'm a little naive.
Is she right?
In some ways, Sophia admitted. She reached for the chopsticks and broke them apart. Before I came to Wake, I'd never even had a boyfriend before. In high school, I was kind of a nerd, and with work, I didn't have a lot of time to go to parties or anything like that. I mean, I wasn't a hermit, and I knew what people did on the weekends. I knew there were drugs at school and sex and all that, but it was mainly rumors or whispers that I'd overhear. It's not like I ever saw any of it happening. During my first semester on campus, I was pretty shocked at how open everything was. I'd hear girls in the dorm talking about hooking up with guys they'd just met, and I wasn't even totally sure what that meant. Half the time, I'm still not sure because it seems like different people mean different things. To some, it's just making out, but to others, it means sleeping with someone, and to others, something in between, if you know what I mean. I spent a big chunk of my freshman year trying to unscramble the code. He smiled as she went on. And then, Greek life in general isn't quite what I expected. There are parties all the time, and to a lot of people, that means booze and drugs or whatever. And I'll admit that I drank too much a couple of times, and I ended up sick and passing out in the bathroom at the house. I'm not proud of that, but there are people on campus who do that every weekend, all weekend long. And I'm not saying it's because of Greek life at all. It's in the dorms, in off-campus apartments, everywhere. But I'm just not that into it. And to a lot of people, Marcia included, that makes me naive. Added to that, I'm not part of the whole hookup culture. And a lot of people think I'm some kind of prude. Even Marcia thinks that, a little. She's never understood why anyone would want a real boyfriend in college. She always tells me that the last thing she wants is anything serious. He reached for his chopsticks, following her lead.
I can think of a few guys who would be very interested in a girl like that.
No, don't, because even though she says that, I'm not sure it's true. I think she wants something more real, but she doesn't know how to find a guy who feels the same way. In college, there aren't that many guys like that, and why would there be? When girls just give it away for nothing. I mean, I can understand why you'd sleep with someone if you love them, but if you barely know them, what's the point? It just cheapens it. She fell silent, realizing that he was the first person she'd ever admitted all this to. Which was strange, wasn't it? Luke toyed with his chopsticks, picking at the rough edges where he had broken them apart, taking his time to consider it. Then, leaning into the lamplight, he said,
Sounds kind of mature, if you ask me.
She raised the menu, a bit embarrassed by that. Just so you know, you don't have to get sushi if you don't want that. They have chicken and beef teriyaki, too. Luke studied his own menu.
What are you going to have?
Sushi, she answered.
Where did you learn to like sushi?
In high school, she said. One of my best friends was Japanese, and she kept telling me there was this great place in Edgewater where she went when she was homesick for good Japanese food. You can only eat at the deli so many times before you start to crave something new, so I went with her one day, and I ended up loving it. So sometimes, when we were studying, we'd get in her car and drive to Edgewater, just this little nondescript place. But we became regulars, and since then I get these cravings for it every now and then. Like tonight.
I get it, he agreed. In high school, when I was competing in 4-H, I'd go to the state fair and I always had to have a fried Twinkie.
She stared at him. You're comparing sushi to fried Twinkies?
Have you ever had a fried Twinkie?
It sounds disgusting.
Yeah, well, until you try one, you're not allowed to comment. They're good. Eat too many and you'll probably have a heart attack, but every now and then there's nothing like it. Way better than fried Oreos.
Fried Oreos?
If you're trying to find a suggestion for your family deli, like I said, I'd go with the fried Twinkie.
At first, she couldn't formulate any response at all. Then, with a serious tone, I don't think anyone in the Northeast would eat such a thing.
You'd be surprised, he said. It could be the next big thing up there. People lining up all day long.
With a tiny shake of her head, she turned to the menu again.
So, 4-H, huh? I started when I was a kid. Pigs.
What is it exactly? I mean, I've heard about it, but I don't know what it is.
It's supposed to be about citizenship and responsibility and all that stuff. But when it comes to competing, it's more about learning how to choose a good pig when it's little. You check out its parents, if you can, or pictures or whatever. Then you try to pick the one that you think has a chance to be a good show pig. You want a firm pig with a lot of muscle and not too much fat, and no blemishes. And then, basically, you raise it for about a year. You feed it and care for it. In a way, they almost become like pets.
Let me guess, you named all of them Pig.
Actually, no. My first one was named Edith, the second one Fred, the third one was Maggie. I can go down the list if you'd like.
How many were there over the years?
He drummed his fingers on the table. 9, I think. I started when I was in the 3rd grade, and I did it until junior year in high school.
And then when they're grown, where do you compete?
At the state fair. The judges look them over, and then you find out if you won.
And if you win?
You get a ribbon. But win or lose, you still end up selling the pig, he said.
What happens to the pig?
The same thing that usually happens to pigs, he answered. They're sent to the slaughterhouse.
She blinked. You mean, you raise it from when it's little, you name it, you care for it for a year, and then you sell it so it can be killed? He looked at her, his expression curious.
What else would you do with a pig?
She was dumbfounded, unable to respond. Finally, she shook her head. I just want you to know that I have never, ever met anyone like you before.
I think, he countered, that I could say the same thing about you.
10. Luke. Even after studying the menu, he wasn't sure what to order. He knew he could have gone with something safe, like the chicken or beef teriyaki she'd mentioned, but he was reluctant to do that. He'd heard people rave about sushi and knew he should try it. Life was about experience, wasn't it? The problem was that he didn't have the slightest idea what to choose. To his mind, raw fish was raw fish, and the pictures didn't help at all. As far as he could tell, he was supposed to order either the reddish one or the pinkish one or the whitish one, none of which hinted at how it might taste.
He peeked at Sophia over the top of his menu. She'd applied a bit more mascara and lipstick than she had on the day she'd come out to the ranch, reminding him of the night he'd first seen her. It seemed impossible that it had been less than a week ago. While generally a fan of natural beauty, he had to admit the makeup added a sophisticated touch to her features. On their way to the table, more than one man had turned to watch her pass.
What's the difference between nigiri sushi and maki sushi? He asked.
Sophia was still perusing the menu as well. When the waitress had come by, she'd ordered 2 Sapporos, a Japanese beer, 1 for each of them. He had no idea how that would taste either.
Nigiri means the fish is served on a pat of rice, she said. Maki means it's rolled with seaweed.
Seaweed?
She winked.
It's good. You'll like it.
He compressed his lips, unable to hide his doubts. Beyond the windows, there were people at tables inside, enjoying whatever it was they'd ordered, all of them adept with their chopsticks. At least he was okay at that, his skills honed from eating Chinese food from thin cardboard boxes while on the road.
Why don't you go ahead and order for me, he said, putting the menu aside. I trust you.
Okay, she agreed.
What am I going to try?
A bunch of things, she said. We'll try some anago, ahi, aji, hamachi, maybe some others.
He lifted his bottle, about to take a sip.
You do realize that sounds like gibberish to me.
Anago is eel, she clarified.
The bottle froze in midair.
Eel?
You'll like it, she assured him, not bothering to hide her amusement. When the waitress came by, Sophia rambled off the order like an expert. Then they settled into easy conversation, interrupted only when their meal arrived. He gave her an abbreviated overview of his childhood, which, despite his chores at the ranch, had been fairly typical. His high school years included varsity wrestling for 3 years, all 4 homecoming dances, both proms, and a handful of memorable parties. He told her that in the summers, he and his parents would take the horses up to the mountains near Boone for a few days, where they'd go trail riding, the only family vacations they ever took. He talked a bit about his practices on the mechanical bull in the barn, and how his father had tinkered with the bull to make the motion even more violent. The practice sessions had started when he was still in elementary school, his father critiquing his every move. He mentioned some of the injuries he'd suffered over the years, and described the nerves he'd felt when riding in the PBR World Championships. Once, he'd been in the running for the championship until the final ride, only to finish 3rd overall. And through it all, Sophia listened raptly, interrupting him only occasionally to ask questions. He felt the laser-like focus that she trained on him, absorbing every detail, and by the time the waitress had removed their plates, everything about her, from her easy laughter to her slight but discernible northern accent, struck him as charming and desirable. More than that, he felt like he could truly be himself despite their differences. When he was with her, he found it easy to forget the stress he felt whenever he thought about the ranch, or his mom, or what was going to happen if his plans didn't work out. He was so absorbed in his thoughts, it took a moment before he realized she was staring at him. What are you thinking about? She asked.
Why?
You looked almost lost there for a minute.
Nothing.
You sure?
I hope it wasn't the Inago. No. Just thinking about what I have to do before I leave this weekend.
She furrowed her brow, watching him. Okay, she finally said. When do you leave?
Tomorrow afternoon, he said, thankful she'd let it pass. I'll drive to Knoxville after I finish up and spend the night. On Saturday night, I'll start driving back. I'll get in late, but it's the first weekend we're selling pumpkins. I got most of the Halloween stuff set up today. Jose and I built a great maze out of hay bales, among other things. But a lot of people always show up. Even with Jose pitching in, my mom still needs extra help.
Is that why she was mad at you? Because you'll be out of town?
Partly, he said, pushing a bright pink sliver of ginger around his plate. She's mad because I'm riding, period.
Isn't she used to it by now? Or is it because you got hurt on Big Ugly Critter?
My mom, he said, choosing his words with care, is worried that something's going to happen to me.
But you've been injured before, lots of times.
Yes.
Is there something you're not telling me?
He didn't answer right away. How about this, he said, laying his chopsticks down. When the time is right, I'll tell you all about it.
I could always ask your mom, you know.
You could, but you'd have to meet her first.
Well, maybe I'll just go out there on Saturday and try.
Go ahead. But if you do, just be prepared to be put to work. You'll be carrying pumpkins all day.
I've got muscles.
Have you ever carried pumpkins all day?
She leaned across the table. Have you ever unloaded a truck filled with meat and sausage? Her expression was victorious when he didn't answer. See? We do have something in common. We're both hard workers.
And we can both ride horses now, too.
She smiled. That, too. How'd you like the sushi?
It was good, he said.
I get the feeling you would have preferred pork chops.
I can have pork chops anytime. It's one of my specialties.
You cook?
On the grill, he said. My dad taught me.
I think I'd like for you to grill for me sometime.
I'll make anything you want, as long as it's burgers, steaks, or pork chops.
She leaned closer. So what's next? Would you like to risk our luck and go to a frat party? I'm sure they're getting going about now.
What about Brian?
We'll go to a party at a different house, one he never goes to. And we wouldn't have to stay long. You might have to ditch the hat, though.
If you'd like to, I'm game.
I can go anytime. I was asking for you.
What are they like?
He asked.
Music, a bunch of drinking college kids, that kind of stuff?
Pretty much. He thought about it for a second before shaking his head.
It's not really my thing, he admitted.
I didn't think so, We could always do a tour of the campus if you'd like.
I think I'd rather save that for another time. So you have to go out with me again.
She traced her finger around the rim of her water glass. Then what do you want to do? He didn't answer right away, and for the first time he wondered how different things might be had he not made the decision to ride again. His mom wasn't happy, and frankly, even he wasn't sure it was a good idea. But somehow it had led to a date with a girl he already knew he'd never forget.
Are you up for a little drive? I know a place where I can promise you won't see anyone you know. It's quiet, but it's really pretty at night.
Back at the ranch, the moon lent a silver wash to the world as they stepped out of the truck. Dog, a blur in the darkness, came racing out from beneath the porch, stopping at Sophia's side almost as though he'd been expecting them.
I hope this is okay, he said. I wasn't sure where else to go.
I knew you were bringing me here, Sophia said, reaching down to pet Dog. If it bothered me, I would have said something. He motioned toward his house.
We could sit on the porch, or there's a great spot down by the lake.
Not the river?
You've already been to the river.
She took in the surroundings, then turned to him again.
Are we going to sit in chairs in the back of the truck again?
Of course, he said. Trust me, you wouldn't want to sit on the ground. It's a pasture.
He watched as Dog began to circle her legs. Can we bring Dog? She asked.
Dog will follow whether I want him to come or not.
Then the lake it is, she said.
Let me just get some things from the house, okay?
He left her, returning with a small cooler and some blankets beneath his arm, which he loaded into the back of the truck. They got in, the engine coming to life with a roar.
Your truck sounds like a tank, she shouted over the noise. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Do you like it? I had to modify the exhaust system to make it sound the way it does. I added a second muffler and everything.
You did not. No one does that.
I did,
he offered.
Lots of people do.
People who live on ranches, maybe.
Not just us. People who hunt and fish do it, too.
Basically anyone with a gun and a passion for the outdoors, in other words.
You mean there are other kinds of people in the world?
She smiled as he backed out, turning onto the drive before heading past the farmhouse. There were lights blazing from inside the living room, and he wondered what his mom was doing. He thought then about what he'd said to Sophia, and what he hadn't. Trying to clear his thoughts, he rolled down the window, resting his elbow on the ledge. The truck bumped along, and from the corner of his eye he could see Sophia's wheat-colored hair fanning out in the breeze. She was staring out the passenger window as they rode past the barn in comfortable silence. At the pasture, he hopped out and opened a gate before nosing the truck through and closing the gate behind him. Turning the beams on high, he drove slowly to avoid damaging the grass. Near the lake, he stopped and turned the truck around just as he had at the rodeo, and shut down the engine.
Watch where you step,
he warned.
Like I said, this is part of the pasture.
He opened her window and turned on the radio, then went around to the back of the truck. He helped Sophia climb up before setting up the chairs. And then, just as they had less than a week earlier, they sat in the bed of the truck, this time with a blanket draped over Sophia's lap. He reached for the cooler and pulled out two bottles of beer. He opened both, handing one to Sophia, watching as she took a sip. Beyond them, the lake was a mirror, reflecting the crescent moon and the stars overhead. In the distance, on the other side of the lake, the cattle congregated near the bank were huddled together, their white chests flashing in the darkness. Every now and then, one of the mood and the noise floated across the water, mingling with the sounds of frogs and crickets. It smelled of grass and dirt and the earth itself, almost primordial.
It's beautiful here, Sophia whispered.
He felt the same word could be used to describe her, but he kept his thoughts to himself.
It's like the clearing at the river, she added, only more open.
Kind of, he said. But like I told you, I tend to go out there when I want to think about my dad. This place is where I come to think about other things.
Like what?
The water nearby was still and reflected the sky like a mirror.
Lots of things,
he said.
Life, work, relationships.
She shot him a sidelong glance. I thought you haven't been in a lot of relationships.
That's why I have to think about them.
She giggled. Relationships are tricky. Of course, I'm young and naive, so what do I know?
So if I was to ask you for advice,
I'd say there are better people out there to ask. Like your mom, maybe?
Maybe, he said. She got along pretty well with my dad, especially after he gave up the rodeo circuit and was available to help out around the ranch. If he'd kept at it, I don't know if they would have made it. It was too much for her to handle on her own, especially with me to take care of. I'm pretty sure she told him exactly that. So he stopped. And growing up, whenever I asked him about it, he'd just say that being married to my mom was more important than riding horses.
You sound proud of her.
I am, he said. Even though both my parents were hard workers, she's the one who really built up the business. When she inherited it from my grandfather, the ranch was struggling. Cattle markets tend to fluctuate a lot, and some years you don't make much of anything. It was her idea to focus on the growing interest in organic beef. She was the one who'd get in the car and drive all over the state, leaving brochures and talking to restaurant owners. Without her, there would be no such thing as Collins beef. To you, it might not mean much, but to high-end beef consumers in North Carolina, it means something.
Sophia took that in while she examined the farmhouse in the distance. I'd like to meet her.
I'd bring you by now, but she's probably already asleep. She goes to bed pretty early. But I'll be here on Sunday if you'd like to come over.
I think you just want me to help you haul pumpkins.
I was thinking you could come by for dinner, actually. Like I said, during the day it's pretty busy.
I'd like that if you think your mom will be okay with that.
She will.
What time?
Around 6?
Sounds great, she said. By the way, where's that maze you were talking about?
It's near the pumpkin patch.
She frowned. Did we go there the other day?
No,
he said.
It's actually closer to the main road near the Christmas trees.
Why didn't I notice it when we drove in?
I don't know. Because it was dark, maybe?
Is it a scary maze?
With spooky scarecrows and spiders and all that? Of course, but it's not really spooky. It's mainly for little kids. One time my dad went a little overboard and a few of the kids ended up crying. Since then we try to keep it toned down. But there are a ton of decorations in there. Spiders, ghosts, scarecrows, friendly looking ones.
Can we go?
Of course. I'll be happy to show you. But keep in mind it's not the same for big people since you can see over the bales.
He waved away a couple of gnats.
You didn't really answer my earlier question, by the way.
What question?
About relationships, he said.
She adjusted the blanket again. I used to think I understood the basics. I mean, my mom and dad have been married for a long time, and I thought I knew what I was doing. But I guess I didn't learn the most important part.
Which is?
Choosing well in the first place.
How do you know if you're choosing well?
Well, she hedged. That's where it starts getting tricky. But if I had to guess, I think it starts with having things in common, like values. For instance, I thought it important that Brian be faithful. He was obviously operating under a different value system.
At least you can joke about it.
It's easy to joke when you don't care anymore. I'm not saying it didn't hurt me, because it did. Last spring, after I found out he hooked up with another girl, I couldn't eat for weeks. I probably lost 15 pounds.
You don't have 15 pounds to lose.
I know, but what could I do? Some people eat when they get stressed. I'm the other kind. And when I got home last summer, my mom and dad were panicked. They begged me to eat every time I turned around. I still haven't regained all the weight I lost. Of course, it hasn't been easy to eat since school started back up either.
I'm glad you ate with me then.
You don't stress me out.
Even though we don't have a lot in common?
As soon as he said it, he worried that she would hear the undercurrent of concern, but she didn't seem to detect it. We have more things in common than you'd think. In some ways, our parents were pretty similar. They were married for a long time, worked in a struggling family business, and expected the kids to chip in. My parents wanted me to do well in school. Your dad wanted you to be a champion bull rider, and we both fulfilled their expectations. We're both products of our upbringing, and I'm not sure that's ever going to change. Surprising himself, he felt a strange sense of relief at her answer.
You ready to check out that maze yet?
How about if we finish our beers first? It's too nice out here to leave just yet. As they slowly drained their bottles, they chatted idly and watched the moonlight trace a path across the water. Though he felt the urge to kiss her again, he resisted it. Instead, he reflected on what she'd said earlier, about their similarities, thinking she was right and hoping that it was enough to keep her coming back to the ranch. After a while, their conversation lapsed into a peaceful lull, and he realized he had no idea what she was thinking. Instinctively, he reached toward the blanket. She seemed to realize what he was doing, and wordlessly held his hand. The night air was turning crisper, giving the stars a crystalline cast. He looked up at them, then over to her, and when her thumb gently began to trace the contours of his hand, he responded in kind. In that instant, he knew with certainty that he was already falling for her, and that there was nothing on earth he could do to stop it. As they strolled through the pumpkin patch toward the maze, Luke continued to hold her hand. Somehow, this simple gesture felt more significant than their earlier kisses, more permanent somehow. He could imagine holding it years into the future, whenever they were walking together, and the realization startled him. What are you thinking about? He walked a few paces before answering.
A lot of things, he finally said.
Did anyone ever tell you that you have a tendency to be vague?
Does it bother you?
He countered. I haven't decided yet, she said, squeezing his hand. I'll let you know.
The maze is right over there, he pointed. But I wanted to show you the pumpkin patch first.
Can I pick one?
Sure.
Will you help me carve it for Halloween?
We can carve it after dinner. And just so you know, I'm kind of an expert.
Oh, yeah?
I've already carved 15 or 20 this week. Scary ones, happy ones, all kinds.
She gave him an appraising look. You are obviously a man of many talents.
He knew she was teasing him, but he liked it. Thanks.
I can't wait to meet your mom.
You'll like her.
What's she like?
Let's just say that you shouldn't expect a lady in a flowered dress and pearls. Think more jeans and boots with straw in her hair.
Sophia smiled. Got it. Anything else I should know?
My mom would have been a great pioneer. When something has to be done, she just does it, and she expects the same from me. She's kind of no-nonsense, and she's tough.
I would think so. It's not an easy life out here.
I mean, she's really tough. Ignores pain, never complains, doesn't whine or cry. 3 years ago, she broke her wrist falling off a horse. So what did she do? She said nothing, worked the rest of the day, cooked dinner, and then afterwards, she drove herself to the hospital. I didn't know a thing about it until I noticed her cast the next day.
Sophia stepped over some wayward vines, careful not to damage any of the pumpkins. Remind me to be on my best manners.
You'll be fine. She'll like you. You two are more alike than you'd think.
When she glanced over at him, he went on.
She's smart, he said. Believe it or not, she was valedictorian of her high school class, and even now she reads, does all the bookkeeping, and stays on top of the business. She's opinionated, but she expects more from herself than from others. If she had one weakness, it was that she was a sucker for guys in cowboy hats.
She laughed.
Is that what I am? A sucker for cowboys? I don't know. Are you?
She didn't answer. Your mom sounds pretty amazing.
She is, he said. And who knows, maybe if she's in one of her moods, she'll tell you one of her stories. My mom is big on stories.
Stories about what?
Anything, really. But they always make me think.
Tell me one, she said. He stopped and then squatted down near an oversized pumpkin.
All right,
he said as he shifted the pumpkin from one side to the other.
After I won the high school national championship in rodeo...
Wait, she said, cutting him off. Before you go on, they have rodeo in high school here?
They have it everywhere.
Why?
Not in New Jersey. Of course they do. Contestants come from every state. You just have to be in high school.
And you won?
Yes, but that's not the point, he said, standing up and taking her hand again. I was trying to tell you that after I won, the first time, not the second time, he teased. I was jabbering on about my goals and what I wanted to do, and of course my dad was just lapping it up.
But my mom started to clear the table, and after a while, she interrupted my grand fantasy to tell me a story. And it's stayed with me ever since. What did she say? A young man lives in a tiny, run-down cottage on the beach,